just done the sugya of interrupting and then figuring out how it applies to Hallel and Megillah. So there is a short little passage here that comes in between, and I'll share with you. I think the first Shtickel Torah that I ever published was in high school. Was based on this Gemara. So you'll tell me if it still holds up at all. I'm not sure, but you'll let me know. The Gemara has a passage over here in the middle of Yudal Amud Aleph, at the end of the first wide line. Boy minei Ashian, Tana debei Ravami, Ravami. So Ashian asked Ravami the following question. Hashori b'tainis. If somebody is taking upon himself a personal kindness, mahu shayito. So what is the halacha regarding tasting? So should we assume that even though he's not allowed to eat, but the taste is permitted? But to figure out what that word means in this context. But the Gemara assumes that it's dependent on the following considerations. Here Rashi says, Mashiyitim asatav shel adas im tzarech melech otavlin. That if you want to taste to see the what you're cooking, to see if it needs, let's say, some salt or some type of spices, so that's your intent. So is that permissible on a fast day? So that explains why you're doing it, but as we'll see, there are probably more details that are necessary in order to establish something as tasting rather than eating. So the Gemara sets up the question the following way. Do we say, Achila ushasiya kavalei v'halaka? Do we say that the nature of his acceptance when he took upon the fast, so he meant to prohibit himself in eating and drinking, and that is not the case here? That's not what's happening? O Dilma hanoa kavalei v'halaka. Or should we say that what he accepted upon himself was really a prohibition of hana, not just of eating and drinking, but of any kind of benefit from the food? And that the taka is. So the response was, Amalei toim v'im v'kachlon. So yes, he can taste, and this is not a problem at all. So Tani Nami Hachi, we learned also, Matemes eino tzuna bracha, in somebody who is tasting food does not require a bracha. V'hashori v'tainis tolim v'im v'kachlom, and one who is fasting can taste and it's not an issue. Ad kama ravami vasi tamei ad shur v'yasa. So how far does this extend? So he quotes the Rav Mirvasi, they would taste up into a Revius. So apparently, there are a number of considerations here, right? So presumably, to qualify as tasting, as opposed to eating, so a number of things have to be present. So one of them, a number of considerations, so one of them is that presumably it's a question of intent. Right? It's not that he's looking to just have a very small snack, but it's for the purposes of testing the food rather than consuming it. That would seem to be the initial definition of tuma. But we see perhaps two other considerations. One other consideration is there's apparently a maximum limit of what can be called tuma. And so that's what the Gemara talks to you about revius. Then if you're going to say, well, I just have to taste this, then you're going to wolf down the whole thing. So then apparently that's not going to be called tasting. But there's another consideration that emerges from the Rishonim. And if you think about it, it's a little difficult. And that was what I wrote this first article about. That if you look at this short Tosas in the bottom of the page, so Tosas has a comment here that's in a number of the other Rishonim as well. Says Toim v'ein b'kach klum. So Perish v'ein chanano shechozer ufoli. That the assumption here is that he spits out what he's eating afterwards. So that it should not be considered that he is benefiting from this tasting. But if he is going to swallow it, so then that's not permissible, even on other fast days, when Mishum Hachi means the lesser fast days, and Mishum Hachi, Hapolet Eino Tzarech Bracha She'eino Nen. And therefore, somebody who's going to spit it out doesn't need a bracha because he is not benefiting. So this is the third criteria, right? So then we can essentially say that there are three criteria that emerge from the Gemara with the Rishonim, with Rashi and Tosfos, that your intent is for the purposes of tasting rather than consuming, that it's a restricted amount that we're talking about, and that you're not even swallowing even that small amount, but that you are spitting it out. So this is, I think, a problem in terms of how this Tosfos flows with the Gemara. Do you pick up on it? You see what I'm talking about?
Just Gemara, come on.
So therefore, right, so how does that...
implies that there is an off from...
Right, so that is where the issue is, that the Gemara essentially set up the question this way, right, that apparently tasting is not called achila, but it is called hana. So therefore, if we want to know if it's permissible or not, so we have to ask the following question. What is it that we accept as a prohibition on this personal fast day? Is it only achila and shtia, which would therefore allow tasting? Or is it broader than that? Is it any benefit which presumably would prohibit tasting? So if you're going to say that it's permissible to taste, what do you seem to be saying, therefore, based on that correlation? That there's no prohibition of hana. That the only prohibition is actual eating. So now you have Tosfos coming and saying, yeah, it's permissible as long as you avoid what? Hana. So why do you have to avoid hana? It sounds like the Gemara told us hana was actually mutter. But the way the Gemara understood the question is that hana is the whole issue. So if you're allowed to taste, there's no isur hana, and if there's an isur hana, you're not allowed to taste. So if you can taste, there's no isur hana. And yet Tosfos says, yeah, you can taste as long as you make sure to avoid hana.
And how do you even do that?
By spitting it out.
Right,
so if you spit it out, so that gives us then three criteria. Apparently they have to be in place, your motive, the amount, and the actual process, that you're not swallowing. So it just seems to be difficult in terms of the structure of the Gemara. It doesn't seem to follow. So you could tell me if this still holds up. I thought maybe you could say a little bit as follows. That there is a question that Tzlach asks. I know the Behuda in his commentary, so he asks a question which may have occurred to you. This passage here, how did it get here? Yeah, you're wondering that also, right? So what is that going to do with anything? I mean, it's not really part of the discussion here. So I think you're right, that might be the connection between the two. So I think that the Tzlach thought that the connection was, if you remember correctly, perhaps even a milder connection, that the previous passage was, and the Gemara right before this, was the Gemara that had asked about interrupting in the middle of Hallel and Megillah. And the way that question was posed, it said, and here we have, so that's a little bit of a parallel, but it's hard to believe that that's enough of a parallel to explain what it's doing here. So I think your suggestion might be correct, that maybe the connection between the two is this other phrase, ein b'kach klum, that appears in both discussions. And the Gemara, they both have a similar structure, that they both pose a question, and the question that's asked is presented as being dependent on two possibilities, two possible understandings. And there's an answer, Lehetera, that says, Ein b'kach klum. So the previous Gemara wants to know, can you be mafsik in the middle of Halal Megillah? And assumes two possibilities. If you want to focus on the fact that it's Drabanan, should be mutter. If you want to focus on the fact that it's Persumenisa, it should be Aser. And the answer is, you can do it Vein B'kach Klum. So there is a comment of Rabbeinu Yonah here on that Gemara, that the Gemara says, V'hal Megillah Ma'u Shiasik. So it says about Yonah as follows. This is on Zion Rebbe's Bedape Harif. It says, Omer Harav Mori Neru, Shahafsik Shizkiru Khan, Hu Bakan Hu Kain Hafsik Shizkiru Lael Gabe Kriyashma. That this is the same type of Hafsik, not a random Hafsik, right? This is the same type of Hafsik that we were talking about in our earlier Sogya regarding Kriyashma. In other words, like you might have thought, oh yeah, is there any Isser Hafsik at all? Then it applies to Halal Megillah. Maybe in the middle of Kriyas Megillah I can get up and start talking about my purpose of the plans. Is there any prohibition at all? So what we're talking about here is not that. We're talking about the concept of Mafsik for Shela Shalom that we found in Kriyashma. When we buy Layim, Yusuk Gam came to Emsa Prakim. And we want to know also, if you're going to interrupt here, in the middle of the paragraphs, or within the paragraphs, Nifnei HaYira, Nifnei HaKavod, for reasons of Yira and Kavod. So, Mi Amrina, Kriyash Madurai, supposed to be called Rabban Mibai. So, should we say that Kriyashma is Minatara and there is such a hat there, so Halal, which is Rabbanan, clearly we shouldn't even have to ask. Or Dilma, Persumaniso, Adif Shahalo, Omer was all the Farsim Hanisim, Shalasana Bari, the whole Zman is man. That maybe Persumaniso is a more powerful force, the Halo is there for the miracles that have been done for us. The Afal Pisha posted the creation of May Yerp, they're covered, the Halo Eina Posik Klau. That even though when it comes to Kriyashma, we may allow a Hefsik, that Halal and Megillah, we can't allow a hafsik at all. So Amalei posek ve'ein b'kach klum. So the answer that's given is posek yes ve'ein b'kach klum. The perish that according to this answer, kasha haloshin ve'ein b'kach klum. This language, this extra phrase of ve'ein b'kach klum, that's a little bit of a difficult phrase. Shayadai lo lomar posek. It should have been enough to say posek. Why do we have to add in this phrase of Ein B'kach Klum? Ela Shenucho Liashvo, however we can answer, V'lomar D'Hachik Sani. We can answer as follows. This is what it means to say. Posei K'mo B'Kriyashma. U'mishur Persumanisa D'ka Amres Ein B'kach Klum U'mutter. Your consideration that Persumanisa should have been a reason to forbid it, that's not true. It's still permissible to the Masa. But to randomly have a shmooze about the Super Bowl in the middle of the Halal Megillah, so that would still be prohibited. The afilu bein parak leperak, even at the most lenient stage in between the paragraphs, it would still be prohibited. So what exactly are we saying here? So it sounds like what Rideon is telling us is that the Ein B'kach Klum means that on the one hand, the answer is such and such. But don't put too much weight on what you're assuming is the focus of the question. So, on the one hand, yes, you can be mafsik. But in doing so, when saying that, we're not saying, yeah, that Persumenisa is irrelevant, and therefore there's no is or hafsik at all. Saying that it happens to be that it's mutter to be mafsik, but it has the same issue as Kriyashma, and Kriyashma can be mafsik, here can be mafsik also. But to say, therefore, based on your equation, you might read that to say that Persumanisa is not a factor at all, and therefore I could do whatever I want, that's not true. So on the one hand, yes, it's mutter, but not exactly because of the way you set up the question. So So if that's the case, maybe that's the reading here as well in this sugya. Ein b'kach klum is that yes, it happens to be mutter, but not because of the way you set it up. That oh well, therefore I could read the rest of the sentence to say there's no iser hana at all. There is an iser hana. It just happens to be that this is not going to stop us from allowing tasting on a fast day. And that's why these Rishonim explain, quoting Rabbeinu Chananel, that you are allowed to taste, but you still have to spit it out in order to prevent yourself from having hana, because apparently there still is an issue of hana, even though the questioner had set up his query as if to say that shouldn't be a problem. And then you can get into the question of, so what is the issue? So it could be, as the Gemara in Chulin and elsewhere suggests, you know, there are different levels of hana. This is what we call hana's meyav and hana's grono. That there is the hana of the throat, so to speak, that comes from the eating process. And then there is hana of the stomach, which comes from allowing it to stay down, which comes from allowing it to be digested. So perhaps what the suggestion here is that yes, on some level, hana's grono, to taste it, so that's permissible. But to allow it to stay there, to get the hana's meyav, that is not allowed. And you shouldn't think that, oh, it's only achil and shtia, and that's not achil and shtia, because it's less than, let's say it's less than the kedayis, that's part of it. So then maybe that would be mutter, so apparently no. And that is probably part of it when we talk about shiurim in general. So the whole idea of, let's say, a shiur kedayis or a shiur revius in terms of liquid, so that is often understood to mean that less than that is not considered to be achila. So that's relevant to the Gemara's question. Are we focused on achila? Are we focused on any hana? So in order to keep the, so apparently we are prohibiting hana, even though you could have thought that the Gemara was saying that since you're allowed to taste, hana is mutter. So apparently no, that's not really the case. Hana is still usur, and eating is usur. So you have to have less than a kezayis, have to have less than a shir, less than a revius, as Gemara focuses here on the liquid measurement. And you also have to avoid hana's meyav by spitting it out before you actually reach that stage. Okay, so I don't know if that's still accurate, was ever correct or not, but I think that was the basic mahal.
So hana's meyav is I can understand the grown up, like, you know, you feel it in your, you know, there's some sort of pleasure or whatever, but what's the meyav have to do with the nutrition that you get from it, or is
part
it
the satisfaction, you know, the person is happy that he's eaten, you know, so essentially you could phrase it a little bit that hana's grono is the hana of eating and hana's meyav is the hana of having eaten. You know, the person who feels satisfied because he had the meal, that's hana's meyav, and hana's grono is the pleasure that happens from the eating process. So you can perhaps make that chiluk that you're allowed to have hana's grono, at least if, you know, within these conditions, but the hana of having eaten, you'll feel afterwards like you've had a meal, so that you're not allowed to hold on to it.
Chewing gum maybe an alchemy?
It's interesting. Stuff? Yeah. So there also, when you, in general, when you chew gum, the whole reason why the bracha involved and why there is kashrus questions involved is because chewing gum is not really about the gum, right? It's really about the juices that are in the gum. Right. So it's a way, it's a delivery system for the juices inside the gum. So you end up not swallowing the core of it, but you are consuming, and you're intentionally consuming food, which is really why people will do it. So that's why it has to, that's why I'm going to make a bracha on it, even though you're not swallowing it, why it has to be kosher. So all of that would seem to not suggest that it's much of an afternoon. Mm-hmm.
But when you drink water for taking medicine, you don't make a bracha on it, because there's no, that's what I was told, that there's no intrinsic in water itself. I mean,
that's why the Gemara says that somebody who's drinking water because he's thirsty should make a bracha,
right?
Which seems to suggest you drink water for other purposes, you don't make a bracha,
right?
Including to get rid of the medicine that it should go down. So then the water is for a functional purpose, assuming you're drinking water. If you're drinking something else,
you get hana either way.
Right.
Right, so it's the difference between water and everything else.
Right.
But how does that fit in with this at all? I'm not
Yeah, so you know, so there's just that water has a unique role in being specifically functional,
right,
as opposed to being there for pleasure only. So if you're drinking water because you want it, because you like water, so then that's one thing. But if you're drinking water because you need to get the medicine down your throat, so then that puts it in a functional role. I don't know if it necessarily connects to this. I guess, you know, in a sense, the focus is not on hana, but you are going to swallow it.
Right.
But you know, it's an interesting discussion to have about that halacha specifically. So if we're going to say it doesn't apply if you're drinking something else, so there is something else you would make a bracha. So why is that? Is that because it's only water that has this ability to negate its anah status and nothing else? Or maybe you could say, no, it theoretically could apply to some other drink also. But why am I taking a different drink? You know, if I'm only doing it for the purposes of getting the medicine down, so let me just drink water. If I'm choosing to drink Diet Pepsi, so I'm making a statement that I'm really interested in the Diet Pepsi. Otherwise, I would have just had water to wash down the medicine. So that's assuming then that you have water. What if you don't have anything other than Diet Pepsi? So it's an interesting question, a little bit outside our sugya. What exactly is the nature of that idea that water specifically and not other drinks is exempt from a bracha when it's for that functional purpose? So before leaving this topic of hefsek, even though we don't totally leave it, the Gemara does come back to it a little bit later. But one point we didn't address, I think, when we were talking about the different points, I think there's one issue that we didn't mention, a very important issue, halacha l'maisa, that the Rishonim raised. Zatosis on the previous daf, on Yigimel Mideis. So it's worth just looking at that together, because it's a very significant issue. And if you look at Tosis in the bottom of Yigimel Mideis, Sholom Pnei Hayira, important issue that Rishon will talk about. So the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that even in the middle of a paragraph, one can respond for the motivation of kavod and therefore also for the motivation of yira. So it says Tosfos in Kain, if this is correct, and you have to figure out exactly what means this, and maybe you could be focusing on a lot of points in the sugya, but if there is a heter to interrupt for kavod and for yira in the middle of a paragraph, not just in between the paragraphs, so nira shemuter la'anos kadeshu kidusha b'amsa kriyashma. So then, you weren't thinking about this point, right? But it seems that in addition, you can also answer kadesh and kedusha in the middle of kriyashma. De'ein l'cha mipne ha'kavod gadol mizeh. Because there is no kavod greater than God's kavod. So to answer Kaddish and Kedusha, isn't that an expression of Mipnei HaKavod? So if I can interrupt my Kriyashma to greet a king, so certainly I should be able to interrupt my Kriyashma to answer in the Kavod of God as expressed with Kaddish and Kedusha. So about them, so yeah, that apparently assumes Tosis is the case, that it is mutter to do that. Aval be'emsa yudchet, in the middle of Shemona Esrei, it is prohibited to do this. Demashmul kaman parakein omdim devein gula tefila eilano. So it sounds like from the Gemara later that in between Gal Yisrael and tefila, one should not respond to Kaddish Kedusha. The kol shekein v'tefila atzma, and all the more so the tefila itself. That this great kpeid that we have not to be masik ben gula tefila. So that is a very big concern, but it's even greater once you actually begin tefillah. So if we say that between Gal Yisrael and Shemona Esrei you can't be masik, so then all the more so once you get into Shemona Esrei itself, one's not allowed to be masik. So that is also an extension of what we saw in the Tosfos in the previous daf, that Kriyat Shema and Shemona Esrei are not treated the same way, that Kriyat Shema, despite its deraisa status, has heterim that did not apply to Shemona Esrei. Shemona Esrei is more machmer. So then Tosfos says, Mishmas Baal Levado, somebody who's davening by himself, not totally by himself because he's able to hear a Shliach Tzibur, but he's behind. V'shat Megiel Modim, and the Shliach Tzibur gets up to Modim. Yishchel Modim, he should bow down. Avalo Yomar Modim, but he shouldn't actually say the words to Modim. V'dav Keshayiv Emtah Bracha, that's specifically the middle of Bracha. Avalo Sofa Bracha Lo, then in the end of a Bracha, then he shouldn't even do that. He shouldn't even bow, let alone answer. The Nira Kikareya Bishfil HaBracha, it looked like that he is bowing because of the end of the Bracha. V'amrina Dein L'chro B'chal HaBracha, so V'oshtik M'chachanim, that we don't have a Kriya in all the Brachas, just where Chazal told us to do so. Rabbeinu Tam HaYeravel Sheyamam Tu Bosefel L'kadilanas Kaddish Kedush. Rabbeinu Tam, who apparently was behind a lot, somebody pointed out, since we arrived, they didn't wait for him on his shul, for him to be up to where they were in davening, so he would wait by Osef Ella before going further to be able to answer Kaddish Kedushim at Tzibur by a sober afilu shah kedei ligmor sakol nechoz l'rosh. And it means that he wasn't worried that his waiting created a hefsek. Sometimes the Gemara says that if you were pausing in such a long pause that you could have finished the whole thing in that time, that it negates what you've done so far. So apparently that wasn't an issue. So there's a lot in this Tosfos. Just a couple of points that one could make is that, first of all, so as we started to say before, so why is he focusing specifically on the hetter mipnei hakavod? So even if you assume that it's only mutter mipnei hayira, so then that also should apply, right? We have yira for God too. So why is it only his kavod? It sounds like Tosfos is saying that we talk about mipnei hayira, mipnei hakavod, and as we said, there was a whole debate about what means, and are we talking about halachic year and halachic covet, or about the practical issues, you're afraid the guy's going to kill you, we went through that whole discussion. So here it seems also it's a question of the nature of the greeting. Now one could argue that yes, God is the subject of Yira, but what is answering Kedusha? Is that an expression of Yira, or is that an expression of covet? So it's not only who we're doing it for, i.e. the Ribbono Shalom, but what are we doing towards the Ribbono Shalom. So it seems that this is an example of kavod for God, that it's not going to be Yira that's going to motivate us to actively answer Kedusha, but rather a desire to show honor to God. So we need to have an opinion that it's mutter to be mastik in that kavod for that purpose. Okay, so that could be. But even so, not all the Rishonim agreed with this. A lot of Rishonim do agree with this. I think this is also the accepted view of the halacha. But there are those who understandably didn't think it made sense to do this, because the whole concept of being Gnostic implies that you're in the middle of one focus and you have to interrupt that focus in order to address someone else. But if what you're doing is itself part of praising God, so it doesn't make sense to say, okay, you're going to stop that in order to praise God in a different context. What's the point? So this is not necessarily an application of the technical principle of osif a mitzvah, patim a mitzvah, although it's not irrelevant, but it does perhaps borrow similar principles. That if you see mitzvahs broadly as doing God's work, so to speak, Gemara seems to see it in some of these contexts, so it just doesn't make sense to say, why should I stop God's work over here to go do God's work over there? I'm doing God's work anyway, so I may as well at least focus on what I'm doing rather than interrupt in the middle. And one could say that here as well, that if it made sense to be masik, to address the Kodesh Baruch Hu in the middle of something else, all right, so you would do it. But here, you're already engaged in shvachim of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, so yes, as much as you want to be mechabed God and you want to show yira to God either way, it just doesn't seem to be necessary to interrupt the specific version that you're doing to allow for a different praising of God. So Rabbeinu Yonah and others quote a view like that, that there is no basis to interrupt when you're involved in Shevach HaKadosh Baruch Hu anyway, but this seems to be the majority view, that if we're going to allow a hesek for Basav Adam, so then for sure we will allow a hesek for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's covet within Shema, but not within Shmoneh Esrei. In Shmoneh Esrei, that's not the case, that there is such a hetter. Okay, so that's an important point that comes out of this whole discussion, halacha l'maisa. I guess we should also end that point by noting that there is some debate as to whether or not these heterim in general apply today. The Mishnah Berurah and others goes back to Sefer HaChinuch already, and they quote a view that Bezman is asked, everybody knows what's going on in Shul, you're saying Kriya Shema, so there is no need to be mafsik for any of these purposes. One probably has to figure out if that's really the case. That if that's really the fact that everyone knows, okay, what's going on in the middle of Shema, so no one's talking. So then, all right, Nechanami, that may be true, but if that's not the environment, so it's not like the Gemara is telling us, so cool here, the Gemara is telling us really a mitzvah. The mitzvah is to be mafsik for Kavod HaBriyos, for the mitzvah of Sheol HaShalom. So it's not so easy to say, well, nowadays we'll have to apply this, because it's not simply a leniency. It says, emerge from the fact that there is a tension between Shema and something that's apparently obligatory or necessary, so you have to figure out what exactly the mitzvah is in terms of the situation and the environment that you're dealing with. Okay, Yashikala. Wonderful Shabbos. And that's